opportunity to address lawmakers, and it is going to be a very big issue as we move forward.
He has made an effort to put on the full-court publicity press, bringing out all of his cabinet-level officers to fly around the state to tout this all-kids program. A highly unusual way of getting the issue out in front of the voters, don't you think?
It is unusual, but it's not that unusual for this governor. He has done that with a program titled I Save RX. It was a program that was aimed primarily at senior citizens and others, though, who need prescription medicine but didn't have insurance for it. And it was a drug importation program. It still is in effect, actually, but it has not gotten off the ground the way that he had hoped. It's been about a year in the works now, and people have not really signed up for this program the way the governor had hoped. He did have his cabinet out touting that as well, and people who have nothing to do at times with prescription drugs or with the elderly, but people that still could get the message out. So he used that as effectively as he could, and he's done the same thing here with his cabinet and with other staff members promoting this program.
We learned literally minutes before airtime that the governor, although this was a speech touted to begin around the noon hour, we learned that the governor, as a matter of fact, may not appear in the House chamber to begin his speech until around a quarter after 12. What seems to be the explanation behind that slight delay?
Well, Rich, we talked earlier about how it was hastily called. This is not a speech that was expected more than a few days ago. And what always happens when the legislature last adjourned in the spring, they set the time for reconvening in the fall. The Senate had set a time for 12 noon. The governor's office also set the speech time for 12 noon. Well, they couldn't do both at the same time, so the Senate is convening at this moment and is going to recess rather quickly. And then the members are coming over, and they're starting to filter into the House chamber, but it will take a few minutes for them to get in, get seated, and then for the governor to make his way in.
Meanwhile, we're going to try and keep an ear to the House chamber sound system there. This veto session is expected to last, 6 full legislative days? That would be, 3 days this week, and then they're off a week, then back in for 3 more days. Is that pretty much what the schedule represents?
That's right. They start today, and really no action has taken place yet. Both the chambers just getting started today. There will be some committee action later. We will, from what I can tell, at least at this point, we're not going to see the all kids proposal go before a legislative committee today. That could change, but at this point, it's not on the schedule. But it likely will come up this week at least, and then they'll be back Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday of next week wrapping up the fall veto session. Actually, one of the earliest adjournments for the fall veto session in recent memory. Normally, it occurs the last week of it will occur sometimes around Thanksgiving, even later.
Let's talk about some of the other issues lawmakers will be dealing with in addition to this all kids health care issue that the governor is presenting in this special address today. But they're also going to be talking about considering, maybe end up just talking about it is all, to consider some stronger ethics regulations for pension systems and for state officials, gun control measures. What are those all about? Are those the result of vetoes that the governor has brought in some form or another on legislation that came out of the spring session? Or are these just leftover legislative items from the spring session?
Well, it's a little bit of both. The vetoes, you referred to some gun legislation. The governor vetoed a proposal that many gun rights advocates had gotten behind. It was a proposal that closes what they call the gun show loophole, but it required the Illinois State Police to destroy these records of background checks that dealers at these gun shows keep. And as you hear the speaker, Madigan, making some comments here as the governor is still not on the floor, just to give people an update. But that firearm legislation, that would probably be one of the more contentious ones. A lot of anti-gun groups and gun control groups would like to see background checks at these gun shows. They feel that it is a loophole in the law. A bill was passed with support of gun rights groups. The governor felt it didn't go far enough, and he vetoed it. It's going to be coming up for an override attempt, I believe, this week or next. Also, there are a couple of other gun-related pieces of legislation. And then you mentioned ethics changes also, whether or not we see an ethics bill that is as comprehensive as including a bunch of campaign finance reform initiatives or not remains to be seen. There's a lot of things in this piece of legislation, or at least in this proposal, which is not even in legislative form yet, and we'll wait and see. But there are some pension reforms that many people felt was necessary after some scandals that have erupted here over the last couple of months regarding pension systems.
What about the possibility, Sean, that lawmakers will also be seeking funding for some of their member initiatives back home?
That's been talked about, actually, since Governor Rod Blagojevich first took office. People have wanted some legislation out there, some way to pay for the state borrowing money to fund these proposals and fund these projects back home, everything from sewer and water work to school construction, just a lot of different things that people want, lawmakers want. They always want to bring home the pork back to their districts. But it appears as though, from talking with folks here as they return to town, that an agreement still is probably out of reach, at least over these next couple of weeks. They've talked about it for several months in trying to work something out, and probably are not going to be able to do that. What that likely means is that the campaign season will begin, and a lot of these lawmakers really are not going to have that many projects to tout when they go home and get on the campaign trail in their districts. And a lot of them would like to have had some of that money coming their way, and probably are not going to see it unless something can be worked out in the spring.
Well, certainly from the standpoint of state coffers, with the increase in gasoline prices driven partially by a reduction in refining capability as a result of Hurricane Katrina and then later Rita, has driven the price, retail price of gasoline up. The state of Illinois, Department of Revenue and its General Revenue Fund has benefited largely from that, and leading to some speculation, some talk even, that lawmakers might consider the possibility of suspending sales tax on gasoline sales. Has that talk been renewed in any way in the last handful of weeks?
It has been renewed, but I would have to say that it probably is being silenced a bit more because, especially downstate, and I think in most parts of Illinois, we've seen a drop in the price of gasoline since at least after the Hurricane Katrina and Hurricane Rita passed through. It seems as though we had quite a bit of a run-up, and then the price has gradually come back to where it was before those storms hit. That seems to have probably put that issue behind. The state is going to probably reap extra money from that run-up in gasoline because of the way it taxes gas in this state, but most people feel the state can use that money and feel that maybe a gas tax holiday, so to speak, is not the best way to go. The state did this a few years ago for a six-month period. Some people felt that it cost the state too much money and really started the slide of financial decline that Illinois has been in and really has struggled with over the last few years. But everybody out there wants to help motorists. It's a popular issue. But I think, if anything, what we might see is some efforts out there to promote the use of ethanol a bit more, maybe some type of incentives to have people buy cars that can run on the E85 blended fuel. Those proposals are out there and probably are more likely than any type of gas tax suspension.
Sean, back to the main reason, the primary reason that we're on the air here today at this hour, the fact that the governor has asked for an opportunity, a rare request, I think all would agree, to appear before the joint session of the General Assembly in their fall veto session, and that's to focus on this all kids health care issue. Just today, the governor released information that the Illinois State Medical Society has finally come out and endorsed the all-kids proposal. And they were holdouts almost to the 11th hour here, were they not?
They were one of the probably the last major healthcare group out there that had not weighed in and made the endorsement of this program. However, if you look at the Illinois Hospital Association endorsing last week, the Medical Society endorsing this week, what you can sort of read between the lines when you read the prepared statements that they give on their endorsements is strictly that that really they're behind the program, behind the idea of providing health care for kids, making sure kids have preventative care, but they really are not clear about the details. That's going to be the issue I believe we're going to hear after this speech as well, is that nobody is really that clear on exactly how this program will work. I think everybody has a rough idea out there, but sometimes putting that into function is a lot harder. And I think that these groups, by joining and getting involved, really just want to make sure they have a seat at the table when the rules are put together to make this program work.
There in the background, we hear that the regular session of the House of Representatives is being gaveled into recess to prepare for the convening of the joint session, which I think probably means, Sean, that the Senate has convened at noon and recessed their single session to come across the Capitol Rotunda to join the House for the joint session.
That's correct, and Senate President Emil Jones, a Democrat and really one of the strongest allies Governor Rod Blagojevich has in the legislature, is making his way into the House chamber. Again, the senators are going to be making their way across the aisle. They are on one end of the building, and right across is the House. If you've never been to the state capitol, it's not a very far walk, but getting 59 senators to make that trek and in an orderly fashion sometimes is not the easiest thing. So they're going to be coming in, and we'll start to see them make their way in just a few moments, probably just a few minutes away from the governor making an appearance.
Coming across the Capitol Rotunda there on the third floor of the State House, you never know how many lobbyist members of the Senate might encounter on that trip.
Yeah, and that's a good time to catch them probably as well, because they're all going to be in one spot.
There's the Speaker of the House of Representatives, Mike Madigan.
The chair would like to recognize dignitaries who have joined us today.
Well, they're introducing people sitting in the visitors' gallery, dignitaries, as the speaker has indicated. He's about to convene the joint session of the General Assembly in preparation for the appearance by the governor. Back to this all-kids health care issue that the governor is going to talk about today. Sean, it comes down to bill is in philosophical form, is what, 20-some pages. What do you hear about lawmakers' reaction to that idea, the lack of specificity in the legislation itself?
Well, you hear complaints, of course, from Republicans, and you hear some trepidation from some Democrats about it as well, but most of them are probably going to go along with the program. There have been some discussions out there that Senate Republicans possibly might try to hold out and not vote for the plan, but then again, Democrats really don't need their votes if the Democratic caucus can stick together in the Senate, and that's very well likely here. It's tough to vote against more health care for kids, no matter what details are presented to you. And I think at this point, probably the fewer details make it a more popular plan, because there's very little you can point out and say I'm against it because of this reason. That's probably, as I said before, probably by design that this program is so limited on details at this point. And the rulemaking panels in the in state government will be the ones that'll be stuck with coming up with how to make this thing work and try to appease everybody from hospitals to doctors to pharmacists. All of them will be the ones that'll be talking to lawmakers and to other people in state government as the weeks go ahead.
Sean, is it anticipated that the rules and regulations, if the broad outline of the program passes the legislature without specifics, the rules and regulations, will they be established by JCAR, that Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, or will it be the principal state agencies responsible for administering this whole kids' health care program that'll be developing and promulgating the rules.
Well, I think that still remains to be seen as well, and it gets kind of technical for the average citizen out there who doesn't follow the every step of state government. But you're right. I think JCAR, as you mentioned, the Joint Committee on Administrative Rules, is the most likely location to at least approve some of the main ways that this program will work. But we're going to be, they're going to be hashing out details such as reimbursement rates, how the state will, how much the state will pay for emergency room visits and hospital visits for kids, and how this program's actually going to work. And the devil's going to be in the details of it. I mean, hospitals have already complained the state doesn't pay enough on other types of programs to provide health care for the poor. So I'm sure that that's one of the reasons we saw the early endorsements, is to make sure that they have a seat at the table and try to get the best for their members when the rules are put into place.
Admit the Honorable Governor.
There's word from the Speaker of the House that the governor is being permitted now to enter the House chamber here, just minutes in advance now of delivering his speech to a joint session. Speech length. The governor, Sean, is known for being kind of long-winded in some of these speeches once he gets before the members of the House and the Senate. What have you heard about the length of this speech?
At the longest, what I have been told is it'll probably be about a 25-minute speech. It could be much less than that. They are always going over these speeches right up until a game time, so to speak, where they get up there. They'll knock certain parts of it out or put something in, put it back in, and we'll see how it all plays out. I would imagine there will be quite a few breaks in here for applause. The governor will get some standing ovations when he talks about more health care for kids. There have been times when the governor hasn't gotten a very warm reception from the legislature, even from his own party, the Democratic Party. Today, I expect that's not going to be the case. He is starting to make his way down the aisle. He'll be shaking hands with some of the dignitaries and lawmakers along the way. And so it'll take him just a few moments to get up to the podium of where he'll be delivering this speech.
And somewhere along the way, he'll encounter a potential opponent in his bid for re-election, that being State Treasurer Judy Barr Topinka, who still hasn't announced her candidacy yet, although she indicated in a speech earlier today here in Springfield that her decision really rests upon the ability to generate the necessary campaign funds, which I think she's estimated to be where in the neighborhood of at least $5 million.
That's apparently what she is saying. She needs that type of money, and she's looking at federal, state, and pretty much any source to raise that. And we'll see where she, if she's able to come up with that money. I think it's safe to say that, as far as Rod Blagojevich is concerned, the campaign really begins today. This program, this speech, putting it before not only lawmakers, but putting it before voters today and letting them hear what he has to say about it. I think this really does kick off the campaign. He has not officially announced that he's going to be a candidate for governor next year, but there is nobody out there that doesn't expect he will be. So, this is a great way for him to, something for him to hang his hat on as he gets ready to run for governor and make his announcement. And having it pass the legislature, it's going to be a feather in his cap, whether or not the details are actually there. Just saying that you provided health care to this many kids, I think, is going to be tough for opponents to attack.
The governor's still making his way down the center aisle of the House chamber, and I see that House Speaker Michael Madigan has now been joined by Senate President Emil Jones on the speaker's rostrum, waiting for the governor to arrive in the speaker's well. I don't know what else to call it, at least to the rostrum there where the governor traditionally delivers these messages. And I hope it's a short speech.
Well, hopefully it will be. I think the governor, he again has one topic, as you mentioned, and it's going to be this all kids program. This is not going to be like a budget address, or at least it's not expected to be, where he'll get up and talk about a variety of issues affecting the state. I think he's going to be single focused here. I think he realizes that there are a lot of things that even people in his own party don't agree with him on. This, though, is one that I think he's going to get the majority, if not all, of the Democratic Party behind him. And that's, you know, he's already gotten the support of House Speaker Mike Madigan and Senate President Emil Jones. Both have said that they will support and back this plan. That's about all you need to get it through here in the veto session. And that's probably gives him a little bit more air of confidence to get up and make this speech today.
Well, here we are almost 22 minutes past the hour, and the governor still hasn't begun his speech yet. And you and I have been sitting here chatting for that 20-plus minutes, and he's still down in the lower part of the speaker's rostrum working his way.
Here he comes. He's getting up. He's shaking hands now with Senate President Jones and House Speaker Madigan, and a little quick exchange of words, and they'll be turning his microphone on, and he'll be ready to go here in just a few moments.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if we can please take our seats. All members, please take their seats, and staff, please retire to the rear of the chamber.
Sounds like the speaker presiding over a noisy House chamber.
Mr. Speaker, Senate President Jones, ladies and gentlemen of the General Assembly, before I begin, I'd like to ask each and every one of you to join me in a moment of silent prayer on the passing of Rosa Parks, a great civil rights leader, because of her heroism. Because of her heroism and refusal to accept the way things are, one person did indeed make a big, big difference. And so, please join me in a moment of silent prayer. Thank you very much. Speaker Madigan, Senate President Jones, thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to speak to a joint session of the General Assembly. I know this is rare and unusual to do this during a veto session, but I asked for this time because I wanted to talk to all of you about something that I can't imagine anything more important than what I'm going to talk about today and what we're trying to get done for the children of our state. First of all, let me firmly assert that we all love our children, and there is nothing more important than keeping them healthy and happy and safe. And so I ask for this time because we have an opportunity now to do something that has never been done before in Illinois and something that no state anywhere in America is currently doing, and that is providing health care to every single child in the state of Illinois. Over the last 2.5 years, we've had an opportunity to work together on a variety of different issues. When I took office 2.5 years ago, we walked into a budget deficit of more than $5.5 billion. In the second year, $2.3 billion, and in the third year, more than $1 billion. Notwithstanding record budget deficits of nearly $9 billion, together, we've been able to dig ourselves out of the worst fiscal crisis in our state's history and keep our promise to the people of this state. We did it without raising taxes. We did it without raising taxes, and we did it without sacrificing our values. We put more money in our schools than any other state in the Midwest. We provided more money for public safety, and crime rates are down now to lower levels than any time in the last generation. And we put more money to give 3- and 4-year-olds a chance to go to preschool. Because of your hard work, 25,000 kids who couldn't go to preschool can now go to preschool today. And in the area of health care, at a time when 40 other states across the country are balancing their budgets on the backs of families and children who need health care, thanks to so many of you here, we in Illinois have done it differently. Today, more kids have health care in Illinois than had it before we had a chance to have a say in this process. When I first took office, there was more than 400,000 kids in our state who didn't have access to health insurance. thanks to your hard work and the efforts we put together, 170,000 more kids have health care today than had it before. Thanks to your hard work. Thanks to your hard work, we've been able to provide health care, make it more affordable and more available to a lot more people. We've helped our senior citizens by having a law called the No Senior, Leave No Senior Behind law, which covers our senior citizens in the areas where the new federal Medicare bill would not. We now have a program in our state, the iSave Prescription Drug Program, that gives to every single senior citizen in Illinois a chance to get the same medicines they get now, made by the exact same companies. Only through our program they can get it for discounts of 25 to 50% off. We've vastly expanded access to women's health care. We provided more money in the family care program, so more than 160,000 men and women who work but didn't have health care now have health care today. And again, because of your hard work, 170,000 more kids have health care today because we invested more in the kid care program and we enrolled more kids in the kid care program. In spite of these historic deficits, we've advanced in the area of health care, and in spite of the challenges we've faced, we have advanced and given more kids the opportunities that every kid and every child in Illinois ought to have. Yet in spite of our best efforts, there are still more than 250,000 children in Illinois who don't have access to health care. There are still 250,000 children whose parents can't afford to take them to the doctor for regular checkups, whose parents can't afford to take them to the dentist to keep a cavity from requiring a root canal, whose parents can't afford to take their daughter to the eye doctor because she might need glasses so she can do better in school. 250,000 kids whose parents can't afford the high cost of medicine, and God forbid, if their child needs to go to the hospital, can't afford the high cost of a hospital stay. In fact, the number one cause of personal bankruptcies in America are working families who do what they have to do when their children are very sick. They take them to the hospital anyway, but they can't pay those bills, and then those families who deal with an unbelievable challenge, a sick child, find themselves where they are financially ruined. I asked to speak to you today because we have a unique opportunity right now, right here in Illinois. I asked to speak to you today because I would like all of you in this chamber, Democrats and Republicans, to join me to give every single child in Illinois the same kind of health care that we have for our kids. We have the chance to do here in Illinois something no other state has done and what our leaders in Washington won't do. We can provide health care to all the kids in Illinois. Throughout our history, some of the greatest advances in social progress have begun in the states. In the middle of the 19th century, at a time when only the kids of the wealthy and only the kids from families who had means could go to school, Horace Mann led a movement in Massachusetts that gave every child a chance to get a public education. In the mid-19th century, Horace Mann led the way, and Massachusetts did something that the federal government and our country ultimately adopted. In the early 20th century, in states like Pennsylvania and Ohio, at a time when a 10-year-old child would work in a coal mine, those states passed laws that abolished child labor. And at the end of the last century, as recently as the mid-1980s, in a state just north of us in Wisconsin, welfare reform was examined and explored, a laboratory of change in Wisconsin that ultimately led to President Clinton signing at the federal level welfare reform legislation in 1996. And now here at the dawn of the 21st century, right here, right now in Illinois, we have an opportunity to lead the nation. If we seize this moment, If we seize this moment, we can do for the kids in Illinois something our country did for senior citizens back in 1965. 40 years ago, our country made a decision that every senior citizen should have access to affordable health care. 1965, we made a decision as a country to guarantee access to all of our elderly so they can go to the doctor if they need to. 40 years after Medicare, 99% of senior citizens have access to health care. But 40 years after Medicare, more than 8 million kids in our country don't. And 250,000 of those kids live right here in Illinois. Now, who are these kids? First of all, let me tell you who they're not. They're not our children. Fortunately for us, our kids have health care. The governor and the men and women of the General Assembly, the men and women in the Congress, the president, all of us, fortunately, those of us who make the rules, are fortunate and blessed to be able to afford health care for our kids. These kids are not, by and large, the children of the wealthy. The wealthy and those with means can afford health care for their kids, with some exceptions in cases of pre-existing conditions and other issues where private insurance won't cover an illness. And they're not the kids of the poor, because fortunately and thankfully, we have programs in place that provide health care to the poor. No, the kids I'm talking about, are kids that come from primarily working class and middle class families. Families that in America do what you're supposed to do. They work for a living. There are tens of thousands of families all across Illinois who every single day do what you're supposed to do. They get up every morning. They go to work. They work hard. They pay their taxes. They play by the rules, but through no fault of their own. They make either too much money to be eligible for public assistance, but not nearly enough money to afford health care premiums of $200, $300, $400, $500 a month. The children of working families are the children that are falling through the cracks. It's not supposed to be that way in America. In America, if you work hard, you're supposed to get ahead. You're not supposed to fall behind. It is not what the American dream is supposed to be. They are families, like families that I've had a chance to meet, like the Sanchez family that lives on the 5900 block South Colmar near Midway Airport. Bianca Sanchez is a single mom with a daughter, Soledad, age 7. It's the two of them against the world. They live in a basement apartment in a little bungalow, a modest little space, but it's their space in their little corner of the world. And every single day, Bianca, being the loving mother that she is, gets up every single morning, drives her daughter to school, and then she goes to work. And then she takes her lunch, not at 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock like most people do, but schedules her lunch at her job at a health clinic at 3 o'clock so she can go to school, pick up her daughter, and then take her back to daycare when she then goes back to work to fill out her shift. Bianca Sanchez, when she was first hired in the healthcare clinic she now works at, was being paid $6.25 an hour. And when she was paid that wage, she could afford to pay for health care for her daughter Soledad through the Kid Care program. But then Bianca did something that you're really supposed to do. She did a good job on the job. She worked hard. Her employer and boss noticed it. They gave her a promotion, gave her more responsibilities, and they did what you're supposed to do, paid her more money. So much so that now she's being paid $36,000 a year. But one thing happened to her. She literally worked herself out of health care for her daughter. Something is upside down. If you do what you're supposed to do, you work hard, and you've made it worse for your child, not better. That's not what America is supposed to be. Take the Baldwin family that I met recently in Moline, a young couple just starting out with a 17-month-old son, Zachary. The two of them both work. Mom and dad both work. Dad works the daytime shift at the Blackhawk Freight Company in the Quad Cities. He works 52 hours a week, works hard, works overtime. Mom works at night as a supervisor at the Burger King. Together, mom and dad are working 82 hours a week. Their combined income is about $38,000 a year, too much money for the Kid Care program, but not nearly enough to afford health care premiums of $378 a month, which is what the Black Hawk Freight Company would offer to the Baldwin, to Mr. Baldwin, or the $1,000 deductible that they'd be required to pay anytime little Zachary had to go to the doctor. And then there's the Evans family, a family of six from the south side of Chicago. Mom and dad and four kids. Dad works, making $53,000 a year. Mom is raising the four kids. In order to get health insurance for the four kids, it would cost the Baldwin family more than $1,300 a month. On $53,000 a year, the Evans family simply can't afford to give their kids the health care coverage that we are blessed and fortunate enough to provide for our kids. The Baldwin family, the Evans family, and Bianca and Soledad Sanchez are being penalized for working. This is not what our country is supposed to be about. And don't think these problems are isolated or only confined to only some parts of Illinois, because there are stories like this in every part of our state. Right here in Sangamon County, in the seat of our state government, nearly 9% of the kids in Sangamon County don't have health insurance. In Pulaski County, in the southern tip of our state, 15% of the kids in Pulaski County can't afford to get health insurance. Their parents can't afford to provide them health insurance. In Cook County, 12% of the kids don't have health insurance. And even in DuPage County, one of the 25 wealthiest counties in America, fully 7% of the children in DuPage County don't have health insurance. If we ignore this problem, what does it say about us? If we look the other way and we fail to act, what does it say about us? A recent editorial from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch sums it up. They wrote that children who get regular checkups are healthier than children who don't. Children with chronic illnesses like asthma or diabetes aren't as sick as often if they can visit their doctor regularly. Children who get to see the doctor when they need one don't suffer as much as children who can't. And finally, keeping children healthy shouldn't be a partisan issue. So I say to you, this is a matter of common sense and simple human decency. Working together, we can do something in Illinois to help those children. Why should any child have to suffer if we have it in our power to do something to prevent it? How can we say to the Baldwin family, the Evans family, to Bianca and Soledad, and tens of thousands of families like them all across our state, that we can't help? How can we do nothing when, for a relatively small investment, we can do the right thing? That's why I propose the All Kids program. It's an affordable program. It's not free. It's a comprehensive program, which means that the families that participate in this health care program will be able to take their child to the doctor for regular checkups, visit the dentist for regular checkups, see the eye doctor for regular checkups, help them pay for the high cost of medicine to keep their kids healthy or get them healthy. And of course, in those situations, God forbid, they have to be able to afford the cost of their child being in a hospital. Now, the question many have asked, and rightfully so, is how do we pay for this? First of all, as I said, this program is not free. Families that participate in this program are required to pay premiums based upon their income and the number of kids in their families. It's a sliding scale based upon families' ability to pay and their affordability. So, for example, a family of four that earns between $40,000 and $60,000 a year would be required to pay monthly insurance premiums of $40 per child. In a family of four with two kids, it would cost $80 a month, and then it's capped after two kids. So you can have three, four, or five kids, it would cost no more than $80 a month. Those families would be required to pay co-payments of $10 for every visit. For families earning between $60,000 and $80,000 a year, families participating in this program would be required to pay insurance premiums of $70 a month. Two kids would cost $140 a month, but no more than that if there are more than two kids. And the co-payments for those families would be $15 a month. Now, 70% of the kids in Illinois who don't have insurance are kids who come from families that earn between $40,000 and $80,000 a year. We have a chance to help those families. In addition to the contributions the families that participate would pay into this program, we would also save money by adopting what 29 other states across the country have done, an element of managed care in our Medicaid program, by having what is known as a primary care case manager, a doctor, not an insurance agent or an insurance adjuster or a claims adjuster, but a doctor, having that doctor serve as a gatekeeper and providing continuity of care for the men and women and children currently in the Medicaid program, we can save more than $50 million. And by having another component called disease management, which very simply is, if a child has asthma, make sure that child gets an inhaler before that child needs to be hospitalized for asthma. Or if an adult or grown-up is a diabetic and needs insulin, make sure that diabetic, that grown-up, gets the insulin before he or she needs to deal with it, stay at the hospital because of a diabetic seizure. By implementing a primary care case manager and disease management, and coupling with that the money that the families that participate would pay into the program, this is how we pay for our All Kids Insurance Program. We would save $57 million next year and $100 million in 5 years. In short, we have found a way. We have found a way to insure all the kids in Illinois without raising taxes and without any additional spending. Plus, it's good for the economy. The healthcare industry in Illinois is the second fastest growing industry in our state. According to a recent study by Families USA, nearly $88 million in business activity is attributed to investments made in healthcare. In addition to that, under our All Kids program, if we make these investments, wages will increase by $30 million in the first year of the program. And providing healthcare to all kids without insurance also helps all of us. Because the reality is, when a child is sick and doesn't have health care, and that child needs to go to the hospital, ultimately that hospital bill is passed on to the consumers, passed on to the rest of us who pay in the form of higher insurance premiums. That same study by Families USA indicates that all of us with insurance pay for the uninsured to the tune of $1,059 more every year than the premiums that we pay in order to insure our kids and our families. I believe this issue is as simple as the golden rule, something so many of us here in this chamber learned when we went to Sunday school, that you ought to do unto others as you would have others do unto you. We have an opportunity together to live the golden rule, to give to all the kids in Illinois what we're fortunate enough to have for our kids. There are a lot of reasons to do this. Common sense, financial sense, we know it will work. But there's one overriding reason. You see it every time you look at your son or your daughter. We need to do this because this is the right thing to do for the kids. That's why we're here. It's why we all ran for office. We're here to help people build better lives. This is a historic chance to do that, and we have a historic opportunity to help children. Healthcare is not a privilege. It's a right. It's a right as fundamental as civil rights. It's a right as fundamental as giving every child a chance to get a public education. Our founding fathers built our country on the promise that all of us have an inalienable right to life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. This is our chance to give all of our kids the opportunity to follow that vision and to pursue that dream, and to live a life as full and as healthy as we would expect our children to lead. I hope you pass this bill. Thank you very much.
There's the governor of Illinois addressing a joint session of the General Assembly, gathered in a joint session in the House of Representatives chambers. And, Sean, they're pretty much on target here, about 20 to 25 minutes, the length of that speech. I wrote down here that the governor began speaking around 12:23, and that was 23 minutes ago, 24 minutes ago. Some highlights.
Well, I think that he was probably one of the more effective speeches that he has given and that I've heard him give in the past. He stayed very much on message. He didn't, as we expected, did not get into details about exactly how this program would work. He touched on a few possibilities of how it could be paid for. And again, all the details are going to be worked out later, probably after it already passes the General Assembly. But he stayed on message about why he felt this is a vital issue for the state to take on. At the end, he even compared it to civil rights, saying it was as fundamental as civil rights, and certainly putting the legislature on the spot to pass this here in the next couple of days in the fall veto session.
And on the House floor,
the President of the Senate has moved that the joint session do now arise. All those in favor signify by saying aye, all opposed by saying no. The ayes have it, and the joint session will now arise.
In other words, that means the end of the joint session, formally, where the governor has been speaking. I interrupted you there, Sean, as you were in the process of recapping the governor's presentation. It looks like Senate President Emil Jones and House Speaker Mike Madigan are the lead sponsors for the bill that embodies this all kids health insurance program.
They are, and that certainly right there gives you an indication of just how where it stands as far as an issue and its importance here in the fall session. So Democrats are going to make sure that this passes. Republicans can decide whether or not they want to be on board. I would imagine that's how the Democrats view it. And again, we're not hearing a lot of details on this proposal. If people thought that's what this speech was going to entail, they were wrong, and they probably hadn't been listening to most of the reports leading up to today. But the governor stayed really on what he wanted to do today, stayed on message, and that is to, again, as I mentioned, you know, put this on a par with everything from civil rights to child labor laws and how important it is to make sure that kids have affordable health care. And he talked about the earnings groups, the groups out there, and how much money they make compared to others. But still, many people earning upwards, as families earning up to $70,000 a year, many of them cannot afford health care premiums. They don't make enough to be able to afford private insurance, but they earn too little to be able to be on government-sponsored health care programs. That would change under this proposal. People would pay a monthly premium based on the number of kids they have. That would be capped at 2 kids. And then they would also pay a copayment as well. And those numbers vary a little bit based on, again, the amount of money you earn. But the governor laid out what he wanted to today, and I think is going to be very happy with his performance in giving this speech.
Sean, is the governor's office providing any more specific information than that in terms of how many dollars is in the copayment? How many dollars per patient visit to a doctor's office will this new health insurance for kids pay?
Well, and I think it's going to be roughly $10 copayments, maybe a little bit more than that. It depends on how much money you earn. If you earn a little bit below the $80,000, the $60,000 to $80,000 range, the copayment, I believe, is around a little over $10. And again, $70 a month to insure a kid, 2 kids, $140 a month. If you're in the $40,000 to $60,000 range, there's a bit of a break on the amount that you have to pay. But you know, the governor made it clear that that healthcare costs are rising. I don't think anybody disputes that, and it is getting harder for people to pay for healthcare in this state and across the country. And yes, it does result in bankruptcies and a lot of other financial disasters for people when someone gets sick and they don't have the insurance to pay for it. And the governor laid that out very clearly today. And again, I think it was probably one of his more effective speeches. Sadly to say, it doesn't include a lot of details, but still effective in what he wanted to get across.
Have you by any chance seen the legislation itself that that Madigan and Emil Jones are sponsoring in the House and the Senate?
I've seen a draft of it. It is for this type of program, it's relatively small and without much information in it. It sets up the program and names it and gives you some rough idea of how it would work. But again, all the numbers, how much hospitals would be paid for taking on people that are on this health care program, you know, that all is going to be worked out later, and really that's where the details need to really be scrutinized to see whether or not this is a program that can work. The governor says it can work, and basically he's asking people today to trust him and to go along with him on this, but a lot of folks out there are still skeptical of the governor and his numbers as well. So from what they'll probably be voting on, they're not going to get the answers to the questions that they're seeking.
Well, from a practical matter now, in a six-day veto session, how much more detail do you anticipate will be provided in the legislation itself? How many of the details are going to be embodied in the proposed legislation?
I don't expect much more than we've seen already. Now, there is going to be testimony, and there are going to be people brought in, and we may get a better idea of, like I said before, how much hospitals will need to get paid. They're going to certainly probably talk about that at some point, and we're going to hear some different numbers thrown about, and we're going to hear from other groups who may dispute what the governor has to say on some of the statistics he mentioned. But I doubt we're really going to see much more or hear much more about it than we've already heard. Everybody that supports this idea, and I think most people support the cause of giving health care to kids and making sure kids have preventative care as well. But again, the reason that this hasn't been done across the country or hasn't been done even in the state before, even with Democratic leadership in the state, is because it is very difficult to work something like this out. The governor believes he has the formula to get it done, but again, he's not providing the specifics that many people want to hear, and he may be able to get it accomplished. He may be able to get it put into place, but a couple of years down the road, you know, it depends on what they finalize with the details of this and the rulemaking of this proposal. But a couple of years down the road, you know, I think people want to make sure it's still a viable program.
What? Obviously, it's tough to oppose adequate health care and health insurance for kids, but there's bound to be some opposition to this legislation. Might it come in opposition to the draft legislation itself, the 20 pages or so that make up the philosophical bill, or will that opposition come in hearings when they're so whoever it is begins the process of promulgating the rules and regulations?
Well, I think it'll come. I think we'll hear some opposition, and we'll probably hear it today from Republicans, especially some of those who basically are not happy with how the governor has run his administration. There are going to be people, downstaters, who, from what I've talked to, seem to think that they would not face much heat for going against this program in their home districts, because a lot of the people, the majority of the people that this would impact, probably are more likely in the suburban areas, just because the numbers are there. So they feel they might be able to oppose it and really call the governor to task for lack of details and not face any type of political repercussions. But I expect we'll start to hear something, and we'll probably hear opposition all the way through. Again, though, the governor, I think most people feel the governor has the votes. I even heard from a Republican, a House Republican today, who's already coming out on board with this, and I'm sure that she isn't alone.
And there we leave it. You've been listening to Illinois Public Radio's coverage of Governor Rod Blagojevich's speech on his all-kids health insurance proposal. This afternoon, the governor addressed a joint session of the legislature. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 WILL Urbana. I'm Celeste Quinn. Let's turn our attention now to what's happening on the Chicago Board of Trade and on the Merck, and then we'll take a look at Wall Street.
Good afternoon. This is Sue Martin with Ag Investment Services, located here in Webster City, Iowa, with our midday futures report. Well, the cattle market is taking back some of the decline that it did yesterday. And, of course, yesterday it showed signs of